Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howell, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
I tend to be an optimist by nature. I always see the glass metaphorically half full instead of half empty. And so when I talk to pastors or when I talk about local church life, I'm speaking of things of which I am hopeful, things for which I have optimism, things for which I really believe good will come eventually. However, over the course of several years of relating with pastors, talking with pastors, and with staff, I've become more and more keenly aware, and even in my own personal life, with serving as a pastor, serving with churches, it is not always easy. In fact, you can have some pretty difficult days. And so I found that pastors and staff, all of these topics that deal with some of the less bright issues, some of the more discouraging issues, are things that pastors want us to get out in the open, not because we believe that church life is a tough life, not because we believe you're not called to it, but because we believe there are moments where difficulties will come, even though overall it is basically a good calling and a calling that brings joy. So we talked about for several weeks some of the struggles that pastors and pastors' wives go through. I've listened to pastors and I've heard from them, and as a result, we have eight of them, probably not limited to this eight. In fact, according to the comments, we could have listed a whole lot more, but this is at least a beginning.
One of the interesting things that came out in the comments is that pastors were relieved to know that they weren't the only ones facing these issues.
Hey, been there, done that. Still there. Pastors, by and large, don't want the world to know that they have problems. Pastors, by and large, want to be the solver of problems, the listeners to those who have problems. And as a result, they come away saying, I really can't tell anybody that I'm thin-skinned or that my family is struggling or that I'm under stress. And the list would go on and on and on. And so there is a sense of relief from pastors that they are not alone, that they're not weird, that they're not outliers, and that their struggles just really reflect their humanity because that's who they are.
And let's get to the list. Number one is criticism and conflict.
I think I put that on the list because it'd be number one on my list.
It'd be number one on anybody's list,
that'd
probably.
Be number one on my list for sure. I am so thin-skinned that I am translucent metaphorically. I just, in my position, I get a lot of criticisms. When we do something one way, it's difficult to please everybody, and then we do it another way, and it's difficult to please everybody. Pastors are the same way. They lead this group called people, humans. Just like pastors, a bunch of sinners, hopefully all of them saved by the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so when people get together, it will always be messy. And so criticism and conflict, there's a couple of things I would share. One is the criticism seems to be growing. Now, it may be the social media. It may be those who are more aware of it and more in tune to it. And it does seem that pastors are experiencing those challenges. And secondly, it used to be that most of the issues of conflict revolved around doctrinal issues. Mm-hmm. Now they seem to be more trivial issues, at least from my perspective, more trivial issues.
So do you think the doctrinal issues have worked themselves out or the fences have been more defined?
I think it is the latter. I think that churches are pretty clear, denominations are pretty clear, non-denominations are pretty clear on where they stand doctrinally. And so people are gravitating to those doctrinal preferences, and they're really less doctrinal issues that are at the heartbeat of conflict, even though they'll continue to some extent.
Now, the second significant struggle that you listed here was family problems.
Some of our most read blog posts have to do with family.
Yes.
The pastor's wife, the pastor's children, the PKs, as we call them, time issues to spend with the family, the glass house syndrome, and the list goes on and on and on. And I think all of us who are or have been pastors or who've served on staff would like to admit that there is a struggle there, but when it's all said and done, we don't want people to know that our family is not perfect. And there's the expectation sometime of some church members that if there's any flaw in the pastor's family, that that's a problem for the church. Well, to me, that's a problem that people have that attitude. Family problems are pervasive in pastoral life. It's not that we're not going to have them. It's how we're going to deal with them.
What were some good resources or good ways that you dealt with them as you were a pastor?
Well, specifically talking about my children, I had raised three sons. I don't know if you knew
that I
raised three sons. Yeah. And one thing I tried to do with them, Jonathan, is to give them a normal life, that a life that was not framed by being a pastor's kid, but by just being a kid, to let them do the things, be the kind of guys that boys that would have a normal life growing up. And the best thing I did was marry well.
Yeah.
My wife always keeps me balanced, and when I get out of balance, she reminds me that we're just a family, and we're just a family like any other family, and if expectations are different, that's the problem of the people and not the problem of us.
The third significant struggle you listed was stress. I mean, this is a very, very broad category. I mean, this could be a result of number one or number two.
Right.
Or any of the other ones, really. So,
yeah, these are not mutually exclusive. If someone notices that, hey, family problems can cause stress, or criticism and conflict can cause depression, or we could go on down the list. I tried to isolate these according to the responses that we've gotten from pastors over the last several years. The main thing about a pastor's life and ministry, a pastor goes through mountaintops and valleys. He will deal with someone who has a death in the family. Then the pastor will deal with someone who's announcing that they're getting married, or they will do a wedding, or someone who's just become a new Christian. And so it's always ups and downs. Sometimes you'll have a critic. Sometimes you'll have an adoring fan. It's always these ups and downs. And it's hard not to be stressed out when your 24/7 life is one that is basically highs and lows and not a whole lot in between.
Now, what about the stress that pastors maybe place on themselves due to unreasonable expectations of their church? Maybe, you know, comparing their church to the church down the street, those comparison stressors that can be so pervasive in ministry.
I think those are very real, and I think many of us in any position of leadership, pastor or otherwise, are guilty of always comparing ourselves. And many pastors have told me that the worst stress that they have are the expectations they place on themselves. And when it's really all said and done, it's not the church members doing it as much as they expect them of themselves. And so they place that stress on them.
So how do you combat that as a pastor?
First of all, you have to deal with the reality that there's always going to be someone who seems to be doing something better. I remember Rick Warren said when his church was growing at an astronomical rate, and his church was featured in all these publications, and first Purpose Driven Church came out, and then Purpose Driven Life. He said, some people think that because I'm getting all this attention that I don't compare myself to others. He said, the reality of it is I always see someone who is doing something better, or has results that are better. And he says, I fight that comparison. There will always be that case. You can always be assured of it, that if you try to compare yourself to others, you will never succeed. You just got to stop doing that. And I think some of the simple spiritual disciplines help. Prayer, more time in the Word, quiet time. That gets us more in touch with the things of God than the things of the world, which are comparison.
What about a realization that you can only impact your church rather than what somebody else is doing? I mean, it's one thing that you're comparing yourself to another church, but you really can't do anything about what's going on at that church. You just need to focus on your church.
Yeah, this goes back to the issue that every context is unique. Every church is unique. All the needs at every church are unique. And so be content where God has placed you. In a blog post that I wrote, I made a comment when I asked a pastor friend what his favorite church was of all the churches that he had pastored. He said, the next one. The grass was always greener.
Wow.
It was not the current church. Rejoice in where God has placed you, and understand that you're there for that church at that time for a God-given reason.
And you bring up contentment. I think a lot of times in the church, we mistake contentment for complacency, and there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah, contentment means that you are satisfied with God. Complacency means you are satisfied with self. And to be satisfied with self means that you're counting on your own abilities to get things done, whereas contentment means you're finding your joy in the Lord.
All right, the fourth struggle that you listed here is depression. I mean, we've talked about that before on the blog. We've talked about it in a podcast. If these significant struggles do not get addressed, it's quite possible that it could lead to depression for pastors.
Jonathan, the most common response that I have seen about depression is, I had no idea that other pastors experience this. The second most common response was, I am relieved to know that I am not alone in this. The third most common response in depression was, I've always felt ashamed. because I was depressed. And so these pastors go through these emotional struggles, these sometimes clinical depression. And instead of seeking help, many of these pastors will be ashamed that they even feel the way they do. They feel like they're disappointing not only their congregation, their family, but also God. And these pastors need to know that they are not alone, that there are others like them, and they need to get help. Depression is pervasive in pastoral ministry. I did not realize how much so until I started hearing from other pastors. My world was only my pastoral ministry before I started hearing from others. And I think this so-called secret problem is going to have to be something that we will address more and more in the future, because pastors are no longer put on the pedestal that they were when they were the key leaders in the community, when they were looked up to because of their position, and they had that counterbalance. Now they have the heavy weight of responsibility, but not the counterbalance of the automatic respect that comes to them. So this is something that we will be monitoring more and more. And really, I hope in the days ahead that we at Lifeway, through this podcast and through the blog, we may not be directly helping, but I hope that we can refer and hope that we can be a resource and a conduit for help in the future.
Now, how does a pastor go about recognizing that he is battling depression? Sometimes, I mean, you just think that I'm in a funk, or, you know, I'm just really feeling down. What's the difference in just having a bad day and having a prolonged depression? And how does a pastor recognize that, hey, this is what I'm battling against?
Well, first of all, I'm not a psychiatrist, psychologist, or a physician, so I've got a doctorate, but it's the kind of doctorate that can't do any good, so I can't answer all the clinical questions. But you said something that I think is key, and it was the adjective prolonged. If it is something that you don't come out of quickly, in other words, if you feel this darkness, this oppression, this heavy weight, and it's just not going away, it's probably depression. And you really need to get help immediately, physical help. Go to an internist, or go to a general physician and have a physical so that you can see if there's any type of physiological cause to this. Tell the physician what is going on. I have a great physician, and he's I can't really say he's a personal friend because we don't interact that much socially, but anytime I'm with him, he feels like a friend. He acts like a friend. It's interesting that when I go for my annual physical checkup, the first series of questions that he asks me have nothing to do with physical issues. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your stress. Tell me about your work life. And he'll just go down this list of questions. He's not doing a checklist on paper. He's doing a checklist in his mind. And then I think one of the key questions he asks, and this is a good thing for pastors to think of, he asked me specifically, if I were to ask Nellie Jo, my wife, how are you doing? What would she say?
Wow.
And I think that that is a good thing for pastors to know. Ask their spouses, if they were just to be stark honest, tell me how I'm doing, and you'll probably get a good dose of reality that you may not see yourself.
The fifth significant struggle listed here is burnout. And that's something I know we've talked a lot about here on the blog and in the podcast, and the proclivity that pastors have to working too much.
It's one extreme or the other with pastors. Yeah. I have known a few pastors. You want to name them? I have known a few pastors who have entered the pastoral ministry, and I say few for a reason. And their pastoral expertise is golf, relaxation.
And lunch.
And again, I'm not knocking pastors who play golf, so those of you who are listening, don't think I'm pointing fingers at you.
And I'll go to lunch with anyone.
Yes, you'll go to lunch with anyone, especially if anyone pays. So this whole thing about work is usually extreme with pastors. It attracts one of two broad categories, the lazy person or the workaholic. The lazy person typically doesn't burn out, but the lazy person usually is not very effective either. The workaholic, it is not unusual for a pastor to have a 70-plus hour work week, and that just cannot be sustained. You're not sleeping enough. You're not spending enough time with your family. You're not having enough off time, enough R&R. And so if that pace continues, you will burn out. Here's one thing I have to say. I express much thanksgiving. I am glad when I was a pastor, there were no smartphones.
Yeah.
I did have a cell phone,
mm-hmm. But it was in a bag in the car, probably.
No, it was not in a bag in the car. How old do you think I am? You're probably thinking all I had was a landline with a long extension cord. I'm not that old.
No, I had a party line. Probably.
I had a cell phone, and my parishioners, the members of my church, didn't have my cell phone number. That was not given back then. Mm-hmm. They'd call the church, and my assistant would call me if there was something that they needed to contact me on. But if I had a smartphone today, can you imagine as a pastor that I might be looking at every single email, text, tweet, everything that comes in? You're kind of that way too, Jonathan.
Yeah.
And that has exacerbated this whole issue of workaholism. And now it's not just a 70 or 80 plus hour work week. It is 24/7.
Yeah, never turned off.
Never turned off. And that's really why we're seeing more and more burnout.
The sixth struggle you listed here is sexual problems.
Yeah, here's another one that is the dark secret.
Yeah.
That is very few pastors will mention for obvious reasons. There are two things that I mentioned in here, marital unfaithfulness and pornography, the secret sins. The first of these two, pornography, I have not looked at studies of pastors about pornography in any great detail or extent. I just simply know that the problem is more pervasive than perhaps a casual observer would see. So that is one thing. The other is marital unfaithfulness. A pastor can be put in a compromising position with someone of an opposite gender in a counseling situation where some type of relationship develops emotionally between the two that can then lead to physical intimacy. These areas are two problems in sexual problems that, again, are not uncommon in other areas, but tend to lend themselves toward a greater likelihood in pastoral ministry.
Two ways that pastors can hopefully prevent this issue from becoming a problem, or even prevent it from even happening, would be boundaries and accountability.
Let me give an example here at Lifeway. We have policies. I'm not a big fan of policies.
Yeah, I know.
But there's still reasons that you have them. Sometimes I think that you have policies so you can idiot-proof your organization, and that's really not the best thing to do. But on this, we do have policies that a man and woman who are not married cannot travel together alone in a car, of course, if you're on an airplane. But it's the main thing is that you're not spending time alone. Those are boundaries.
Yeah.
Those are boundaries that the organization establishes. And then there's the issue of accountability. You may not be aware of this, but I have started now taking someone with me traveling.
I am aware of that.
Oh, I forgot. You are the guy.
Yes.
And I was doing it occasionally. There are two reasons why I do it. One, I'm just old and fall asleep at the wheel or whatever. But the other reason is accountability. And there was a situation recently, and I'm going to tell this story, and I hope you'll keep it on the podcast, Jonathan.
Okay.
There was a situation recently where I got a delivery in my hotel room.
There was, yes.
And it was a great thing that was sent to me by the front desk. It had cheese, it had crackers, it had fruit, and it had a big bottle of wine.
It did.
So I told Jonathan was in the room across the hallway, and I called him up. I said, come over here. I told Jonathan to look into the room, and he looked. He said, oh, my goodness. I said, I want you also to check it tomorrow to make sure that this wine bottle has not been touched. Now, that's not
it. And it hadn't. Let me finish.
That's right. Please tell him that it had not.
I went and checked the next morning. Everything was good. And the cheese and the fruit, they were fantastic.
I'm glad you enjoyed them. Of course, it's not sexual problems, but it again, it's the issue of accountability. It is the issue of making certain that you have people there to whom you can be accountable.
And number seven is financial problems. And we've talked a lot about pastor salary here on the podcast and the blog. Very, very hot topic.
And I wish that most people would realize that the pastor salary issues that get the most play, the most news, the most publicity are not the norm.
No.
If you hear of a pastor that's making $400,000 or $500,000 or $1 million or some absurd number, that is an exception. Most pastors are struggling financially. Most pastors, if you looked and saw how much they were paid by the hour, would hardly be on minimum wage. And so many pastors do have financial struggles. And I've spoken about this on this podcast, how when I was a pastor of a church in Florida, I had severe financial problems, so much so that we had to eat out of the food closet for our family. But I was too proud to tell the church who could have done something about it.
And it's not just the income problems, it's also expense problems. The American dream, so to say, has made us into almost a society of debt. And, you know, I know pastors who are filing bankruptcy, who have problems with debt, just credit card bills. It's just a problem, not just with pastors, but in the American society as a whole.
Can you imagine how difficult it is to minister to others when you have this cloud of bad finance, debt that you cannot pay, bills that go unpaid if you're a pastor? And the first thing is, of course, your witness, your testimony. But then secondly, it's just hard to minister when you're dealing with such financial pressure.
It's a constant distraction.
It is a constant distraction.
You have a banking background. You're very savvy financially. We've talked about different things finance-wise. Do you have any recommendations for pastors, resources to use for that, you know, to help them if they have financial problems, not on an income side, but maybe an expense side?
Find someone. Find a friend.
Back to accountability. Somebody help you out.
Someone that you trust, someone that you think would be adept at financial issues, and get them to walk you through what needs to be done and then to hold you accountable in the future.
The final struggle you list here is time management.
Again, there's so many overlaps on these issues. It's the expectations of pastors is unreal. We want you at this committee meeting. You need to not only attend or do the wedding, but you need to attend the rehearsal and the after rehearsal dinner and then the reception after the wedding. I did almost 40 weddings one year in a church.
Wow.
And it was like every single weekend. And when it was all said and done, I just didn't have a family life. And finally, I got to the point in that particular church where I said, I'll do the weddings, but I can't do all the rehearsal time after rehearsal dinner. And that's just one example. And many pastors don't have a whole lot of help. Many pastors don't know when to say no. And so as a result, they are saddled with all kinds of time constraints.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by the HCSB Bible, taking into account the significant advancements in scholarship, translation theory, and contemporary English usage. The HCSB will satisfy both those new to the faith and seasoned scholars. Visit hcsb.org for more information. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I appreciate not only the listeners of this podcast, but also the readers of the blog at tomrainer.com. We deal with a lot of these issues on an ongoing basis, so really stay in touch at tomrainer.com. But I'm not the only one dealing with it. Many of those who comment are some of the brightest and the best. I'd say read the comments, too. You may not agree with them. There may be some that you think are just kind of way out there, but there are some wise men and women who are commenting, so stay in touch, and hopefully we can find more solutions for pastors, staff, and others.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.